Welcome to Adjusted Reality, a podcast series trusted by the adjusted and brought to you by the Foundation for Chiropractic Progress, where we learn from athletes, celebrities, influencers, and healthcare professionals about how to optimize health in a fun, relatable way. Join me, Dr. Sherry McAllister, as I speak with Dr. Heidi about latest research and how to maximize your quality of life. We are thrilled to bring back Dr. Horvick this season, season 5, if you can believe that. And if you missed her episodes on how to train the brain out of pain and the connection between muscle function and the spine, well, be sure to click the link in the show notes below to tune in. Dr. Heidi is the director of research at the New Zealand College of Chiropractic. She is a chiropractor and has a PhD in human neurophysiology from the University of Auckland. She is the author of the best-selling book, The Reality Check, A Quest to Understand Chiropractic from the Inside Out. And she runs a company with the mission of enlightening the world about the science of chiropractic. Welcome back, Dr. Horvick.
Thanks, Sherry. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I love talking about neuroscience and the benefits of chiropractic, or really the benefits of good spinal function, because that's what it's all about.
It's really is.
It's improving the spine and understanding the secrets of the spine for how that changes your brain and your health, your function, and your well-being.
Well, for our listeners today, we have a very big treat because we like to stay right on the current information. And there's no better person to really bring this to a consumer understanding than you, because, well, you lecture all over the world and your audience varies from a consumer to one of the highest researchers in the world. So we're excited that you can span the gap. And we know that there's a variety of listeners out there, from healthcare professionals to the consumer, trying to really impact their lives in a really positive way. So we're going to jump right in because we have a lot to cover. So as recent as February 27th, 2023, a recent study was funded by NCMIC, and it showcased in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health the title, Bidirectional Comorbid Associations Between Back Pain and Major Depression in the United States Adults. What it indicated that low back pain and depression are not isolated conditions, and that they have a prospective bidirectional association. And I want you to bring this into our audience lap. What does this mean? Share your thoughts on this study.
Yeah, well, I was really impressed with it because it's just confirming what a lot of research has been showing us over the last sort of 10, 15 years, which is really that they're not isolated conditions. A lot of the problems that we have today are actually connected in multiple ways, very complex ways, but in multiple ways. The easiest way to understand this is that we are all living on some sort of a stress continuum, like 50 Shades of Grey. That, you know, up the white end, I know that's a very funny book, but anyway, up the white end is like pure health, you know, you're fully connected and functional. And down the dark black end, you're diseased. So down the black end, you might end up with chronic low back pain or, you know, deep depression or severe anxiety or a whole host of other conditions. I'll try and limit myself to low back pain and depression because of this article. So whether one causes the other is not really that important, but they all occur down the dark end of that stress scale. And what's so important is we need to be moving up towards the white, healthy, connected end of that stress scale. And I think one thing that's really, really important for everyone to know out there is you can move that way. I think many people think that once they've got that chronic depression, they're doomed, or they've got severe, you know, or low back pain, chronic, and they think that there's nothing they can do about it. But that's not true. And I think it's really, really key message to get out there that what we choose to do in our life every single day makes a difference. And you can move back up again. And that's what was quite cool that came out of this research article, that, you know, if you can get rid of that low back pain, the depression goes. If you can get rid of the depression, the low back pain goes, because they're intimately linked. And as a brain scientist, I read about this and I've read about these connections, about how, and it's even more complicated, like sleep's in all of this. And your anxiety levels are all interlinked into all of this. Your ability to think rationally and clearly and remember things are all interlinked. Often people with the chronic low back pain and the depression also have digestive problems. They also have sleep problems. They'll tend to have difficulties remembering things or thinking rationally. And we can actually explain why that is. But am I getting ahead of myself here, Sherry?
You fired me up, because right off the bat, there is a four-letter word that we're going to use, and it is hope. We give people hope that there is a better way to go from that dark-ended scale that you just mentioned to the light, to bringing it to a more aggregated peacefulness in our lives, is that we may not be at quote-unquote the perfect state, but we're working towards something better by the choices we make and how we actually look at that. And, you know, I can see, and it's, some of you are going to be listening to this podcast, others will be actually watching it on YouTube, but I'll tell you what, if there's anything that lights up Dr. Horvick, it is, she just jumped right in and like literally went from zero to hero in 2.2 seconds. I mean, she's on fire already. So I got to calm her down. I got to bring her back to where we need to go here. Chronic pain and depression. It, in this study, it actually has this common neuroplasticity mechanism. And this is a very important thing, because you mentioned it in those two podcasts we had recently, in that neuroplasticity mechanism is a important piece to this. And so we're going to dive into that and bring that out, because no one explains it better than you.
So what we know happens when the brain adapts, 30 years ago, we actually used to think the brain stopped adapting when we grow into an adult, which was kind of funny, especially when you look back with hindsight. But we know now that right until the day you die, your brain is always adapting. The problem is your brain can adapt in a positive way or a negative way from your perspective, from symptoms. I think the brain is always adapting to survive. But from our perspective, if you're under so much stress, you know, you'll end up with a whole lot of symptoms that we don't like. So from that perspective, we called it a negative adaptation. It's just adaptations. I mean, it's the same process, whether you're adapting in a positive way or whether you're adapting in a negative way. And if you like, you can view those changes as going, adapting towards the white end of the stress scale or adapting towards the black end. If you're adapting towards the black end, that plasticity, that adaptation, we don't like it. We call it maladaptive. Only because it starts to cause symptoms like depression, like chronic back pain. And we can tie this right down to your spine. And I'd love to do that, Sherry. Don't let me miss out on that opportunity. Because I think the key factor here that we need to understand that links everything here is that fundamental stress. And I think it's important that everybody that's listening understands what stress means, because I'm not just talking about you worrying about things, but it can be psychological stress. It could even be spiritual stress. It can be social stress. It can be physical stress. Even something like, you know, exercising is a stressor. And so long as you're not too down the dark end, most exercise, so long as it's not too much, actually pushes you up the positive end. So it's everything that you, expose yourself to, like changes in temperature or even a physiological stress. There's chemical stresses as well. So there could be toxins in your food. You could think about alcohol, all kinds of different smokes, environmental toxins and chemicals. All of these emotional or physical or chemical stressors, you know, you need to adapt to. And your body is designed to adapt to them. But if it becomes too much, you start adapting down the dark end of the scale. And then we start to develop signs and symptoms that will lead to both the chronic low back pain and the depression in people if it goes on for long enough. But again, what you said about the hope is so, so important, because what you do every control to a large degree, you can't change the external stresses around you necessarily. unless it's something like a really bad environment at work, you could actually try and find a new job. If you're in an abusive relationship, those daily stressors, you can try and get out of that. You know, there are things you can do, but the choices you make every day about what you eat, what you drink, how much you move, how your thought patterns, you can, if you can actually become aware of them, quite often we bully ourselves, so you can start to get into intervening there and being a friend to yourself as opposed to continuing the bullying. Whether you go see chiropractors or not, whether you take care of yourself, mindfulness, meditation, there's a whole host of things that are known to push you back up that other end of the scale.
Well, you did put a lot into thinking about the hope, and also you talked about linking pieces together. And it's that linking that really does make the difference between whether you're moving in a positive direction or whether you're moving it into a negative direction. And tell me, would you agree with the statement that there is an actual link between the opioid epidemic and the findings in this research that we just talked about, being that some of the startling findings, especially in the United States of America, and I know that you're in New Zealand now, and I apologize for our listeners if there is a little bit of a delay there, but I do want to appreciate that our mental health is one of those key pieces. And according to one of our top national media outlets, it appears that 90% of Americans believe we are in a mental health crisis. And I would like you to comment a little bit about where you see our current opioid epidemic and then our mental health crisis, because you have the ability to kind of bring the neuroplasticity, our spinal wellness and the hygiene that we have, and talk about it in a way that engages us to be proactive.
Well, I don't think the recent pandemic years have done much good for anybody, because imagine like what we were talking about before, about how important stress is on pushing us down the dark end. And then you think of the amount of stress people went through those few years. It was only a few years, but the degree to stress that we went through, we were isolated, we were terrified. There was a lot of loss. There was a loss of jobs, loss of life, loss of family members, loss of health. So there's a whole lot of stress that happened there. The thing about the opioids that really concerns me, Sherry, is that it's really slow release heroin, to be honest. It's a chemical that activates our opioid receptors. Hence, we call it the opioid pandemic. And what it really does is it masks pain, but you're experiencing pain. See, that our understanding of pain has also changed. And I know we talked about that in a previous episode, but pain is really a danger warning system, not necessarily a tissue pathology system. So again, people are feeling that sometimes when you get into chronic pain, the actual physical problem may well have been healed. There can be a disconnect between the brain not knowing what's going on in that part of the body, and that could be part of the danger warning system going off, and it can be part of why the brain learns to be in pain. But then we take opioid drugs, which just masks that pain, but you're not correcting the underlying problems. So if you're not addressing what's stressing your system out dramatically, then you're not going to really be changing these things. You're not going to change the core problem. On top of that, you know, these opioid drugs, we know they are highly, highly addictive. And our everyday neighbors, you know, cousins, friends, brothers, mothers, they're turning into drug addicts. They get so addicted to these drugs. And then the doctors get a bit worried because, hey, you shouldn't be taking them long term. And then they're going down the street and getting their fix elsewhere. It is so terrifyingly scary. Plus the overdoses. Like, we know, isn't it something like every 9 hours someone's dying from an opioid drug? I mean, that terrifies me, Sherry. This is not a little thing. And everybody knows the science. The scary thing is there's no actual long-term study showing that they're taking opioids over a long period of time is beneficial, but not a single study. That alone should terrify you, right? Totally fine to take an opioid drug if you've fractured a bone and you're literally trying to get through a couple of days of agonizing pain, that's an appropriate time to numb the pain. Totally get it. Brilliant. Perfect. But any long-term use, like I'm so terrified of opioids, I won't even touch them. You know, I will not go near them and I will not, if my family are, you know, even considering it, I'm like, well, you know, you have to literally just about have a broken bone before I'd recommend a couple of days, no more than 2 or 3 days of taking an opioid drug because they're so highly addictive. And if you ask yourself, would you want to be taking heroin if you had the choice? Like, if you knew you were given heroin, would you take it? It's just madness. It's absolutely madness. Yet it is still prescribed at rates that are insane. Like it's.
And I'd like you to jump into that because non-concordant care or care that doesn't follow the guidelines seems to be followed through with some of the research that we're seeing coming out now is that doctors may be going to the least effective method, which is pain control through drugs, rather than looking at that major cause of the problem. Example for you is, you know, you do have a broken bone. We know what the cause is. That is legitimate. We know the cause, therefore we can treat the symptoms. And there are some difficulties in trying to regulate, especially when it's chronic pain, because what I think some of the listeners need to hear on this opioid, you know, you hear the opioid epidemic, but do you understand the opioid epidemic is no one walks in going, hey, I'd like to become a drug addict today. To their healthcare professional. No one does that. No one looks at when you see a 16-year-old girl in the pictures that are literally burned in my brain as I cross America back and forth and back and forth, the 16-year-old vibrant volleyball player who is full of friends and life and resiliency and just total beauty. And then we see her 6 months down the road, you know, sitting on a toilet with a rubber hose around her arm and she's doing heroin, all caused by an injury for a rotator cuff problem. And Heidi, I want you to describe this is a real problem to the listeners to hear this opioid epidemic and understand when you prescribe something, what are some of the questions for pain control that the patients should be asking their healthcare providers?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes to like a medical doctor too, and I, you know, bless them, I'm not saying that they're necessarily doing anything wrong. I mean, they don't have many tools in their toolbox to help with musculoskeletal problems. But what we do know from the research is if you do have like an injury, like, you know, an elbow problem because of a sports injury, we know that conventional care is much better for you. And conventional care then means non-pharmaceutical. And you look at this when it comes to neck pain, back pain, headaches, we know that you want to first and foremost go to non-pharmaceutical approaches. So don't go to the doctor because they don't have any approach other than the medication to give. Go and see someone like a chiropractor. What's really interesting when you see the literature on chiropractic and opioid prescription use in patients is they're a patient who goes to see a chiropractor is about something insane like 60% less likely to fill an opioid prescription that they might have been given by their doctor if they go see a chiropractor, probably because the chiropractor is actually dealing with the problem, the underlying problem, and you don't need to mask it with the opioid drugs because, again, you're addressing the problem. Like, again, if you have a fractured bone, obviously you don't go see the chiropractor, do you? Well, at least not straight away. I still have to put a little caveat in there because if you have had a force or an injury so bad that you fractured a bone, you probably do need to go and see the chiropractor. But first and foremost, hey, let's go get that bone set and taken care of and casted. And, you know, you may need to take an opioid drug for a day or two, then fine. But you as the consumer, you as the patient, you need to know and you need to take the control of your own health and you need to be aware how dangerous it is to start taking those opioid drugs. And that you need to know that there are better options out there. Because your doctor is there for certain things, but then your chiropractor is there for other things. So if you have any injuries, go see your chiropractor and then let them triage you. They are trained. They've got, 5 years of training, and they go through all the pathology and the pathophysiology and x-ray physics and you bloody name it. They've been through it in the training. They can check you out. And if they feel that you need to, if they can, they'll use their brain to determine whether you need any other care as well, or whether it's something that they can take care of for you. But isn't it fascinating, though, that if you first go see a chiropractor, you're something like, and there's another study that's shown that people that are primarily seen by a chiropractor, that there's like an 85% reduction in pharmaceutical costs related to those patients, you know, and there's 60% less outpatients and hospital care that they require because they're seeing a chiropractor. What this tells me is if you go see your chiropractor, it's actually helping you function better. And again, we can go into exactly why, how that's happening in the brain, but you function better, you need less pharmaceuticals, you need less medication, and you certainly don't need the opioid drugs because you're addressing the underlying problems that are leading to these, the need for the, or the pain to begin with. But pain is more complicated than that as well. So I am simplifying things here, and there's a lot more interlinked in all of this.
Understandable. But, yeah. I want to go back to when you talked about the reduction in cost. There's kind of a really interesting continuum from the young people taking an opioid to the older generation taking an opiate, because obviously for a young person, they're not going to be challenged by balance. They're going to be challenged by what's going to transpire in their growing brain. And then there's the aging population in balance. And then somewhere in between, which we're going to call our working population between the 18 and 65-year-olds, looking at presenteeism, you know, are you present at work? Absenteeism, what happens when you're not at work? And does opioid have anything in that continuum? So you've done a lot already to showcase the why opiates are not the best choice given pain-related issues for neuromusculoskeletal, aside from the obvious, which is acute pain. But go through like the aging adult and then kind of start talking about what happens in work on an opiate and possibly with a young brain that is just developing with an opiate.
Well, it terrifies me with the young brains because, you know, it's so essential that they develop naturally. And like everything you do every day, and it comes back to that, that you are in control again, your choices. So what you choose to take is going to be affecting you and your brain is going to be adapting to it. So obviously numbing yourself, you know, again, think about this as taking heroin. Like if you take heroin on a regular basis, you have seen, like Sherry, you drew a beautiful picture of what happens to someone who is on long-term opioids. I don't need to go into any more detail than that. 6 months of, you know, religiously taking opioid drugs and you go from a healthy, vital, beautiful young person to a skinny, sick, pale, half-dead corpse with a rubber band wrapped around your arm. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, it your presence, you're not present. We again go to the older adults. You know, we know that there's a big problem with well, they've got a good name for it, but polypharmacy, where they're just ending up on so many drugs and they don't even know why they're taking them. Now, I'm not against properly prescribed medication, you know, I'm not a fanatic in any way, and I have, you know, all utter respect. But we do know, according to the research evidence, that a lot of older adults, they may see different doctors. So they may end up with the different doctors not necessarily knowing what the other doctors have prescribed them. And they're suddenly on so many different medications that no one single doctor has taken the time to just look through because they're just not aware of all the other. So they end up with this polypharmacy, which again makes it very difficult for them as older adults to function properly, to be present, to be conscious, to be aware, to sense what's going on in their environment and in their body, to be able to control their body appropriately. Again, it's really interesting when you look at the literature. There's a couple of cool studies that have actually looked at, I know we're really going into chiropractic care today for some reason, but there's really fascinating looking at chiropractic care for older adults. And this decline that is known to happen as we grow older seems to stop. So they are better able to control themselves and to partake in daily activities of daily living is what it's called, but just being able to dress and eat and look after yourself and cook and literally stay independent is maintained if these older adults are under chiropractic care. I thought that was really fascinating because we know that there can be this decline. And again, this connection with 85% less pharmaceutical costs in adults who are under chiropractic care as their primary healthcare provider, as opposed to people that are managed by a medical doctor. And again, have a little think as a consumer, what tools does your chiropractic doctor have? What tools does your physician have, your general practitioner have? You know, like there's more of a functional outcomes and improvement, especially now that we understand that when the chiropractor checks and adjusts your spine, they're actually improving the way your brain perceives what's going on in your body and the world around you, so that you can actually perceive accurately what's going on and therefore adapt appropriately. I think that's key. I think a lot of people still don't know the importance of their spine. It's showing to be important for the way your brain interprets what you see and hear. So whereas alternatively, what toolbox does your medical doctor have? They keep you alive and they do a very good job at that. But that functional quality of life, that is not their domain. And their toolbox tends to be surgery and medication, which is brilliant if that's what you need. But if that's not what you need, you know, you might want to go to someone that has different tools in their toolbox, like being able to exercise your spine back into function so that your brain actually perceives what's going on so that you can perform at your best. It also helps in that case, you know, you're making better choices. Like we know from that big, big survey, I think we talked about that too, Sherry,
yes.
35,000 Americans, you know, and then out of those 35,000 Americans, those that did see chiropractors, and I think it was about 25,000, you know, what happens to these people? What do they feel themselves happens in their bodies when they see chiropractors? And about 70% of them feel better and they feel like they can cope better with their health problems. And so basically it's sort of saying that 70% of people that go see chiropractors, A, feel better and B, become more resilient. Now, why is this so important? Because you need to be able to have that coping, sense of coping, to be able to make the right choices every day. And what I'm meaning here is to get from that dark end of the stress scale back towards life and health and vitality. Well, then you need to make choices every day. And they can be choices like going for a little walk. If you don't walk at all, then just one walk around the block is so vitally important. Like we know if we could bottle exercise, it would be the wonder drug of the century. It is so important. So if you challenge yourself, and another thing that could be quite interesting to talk about, Shelley, not necessarily now, is how little goals and achieving them actually makes it easier and easier to set more goals and achieve more. So it's like it snowballs. So if you think of yourself when you're down the dark end and you may be unable to think much or cope much, or there's still things you can do. You can breathe. Everybody can breathe. Even if they can't motivate themselves to go outside, you can start breathing. And literally consciously breathing and slowing your breath down, that alone is important. If you manage to get yourself to a chiropractor and you start to feel a bit better and you can cope a bit better, all of a sudden you can start to make additional choices. And it might be little things to begin with, like that walk around the block. Maybe you choose to also, say, reduce your sugar intake. Maybe you can even go as far as reduce your alcohol intake. Maybe you can start to add a few green vegetables. You know, maybe you start to do regular breathing exercises. Maybe you can move up to walking a kilometer each day. You know, and this is how it can spread to greater and greater because of this dopamine effect by setting yourself these small goals. I know I've gone way off target here, but
oh no, I love where you were going, because you mentioned something important about dopamine, and dopamine is our feel good moments, and which is why I think the opioid epidemic has spun so far out of control. Is you get this little dose of dopamine, and then what are you thinking of? And Heidi, you reminded me of a picture that I saw. It was during one of the collaboratives that we did with opioid support, and it was a support group called Hope. And the picture they brought up is a mother who is taking care of their children before opiates, and she in her little cloud had, you know, soccer practice and supermarket and laundry, all these things in her head, and then she got injured, got on an opiate, and the next cloud was, she was thinking about, well, soccer practice and when do I take my opioid next, and laundry and when do I take my opioid next. And then it furthers down another 3 months, and it's a lady with her head in her hands at the soccer practice with all she's thinking about is her opiate and when she can take the next one. And it's so important, because what you just said, moving backwards on the polypharmacy for aging adults, the decline that will happen is, you know, we don't know all of the interactions of all of the medications when they're combined in this role. And only a pharmacist is probably the only one that truly, truly, truly understands the reactivity for one medication to another. But then we have the loss of balance, the loss of desires, the loss of being present in your job and having these new think outside the box, like totally turned on. You're just vibrating with energy, like Dr. Heidi right now is. You've got it. It's clarity of mind. It's excitement and passion and resiliency to, yes, we all have stresses, but I believe, like what you were saying, is the neuroplasticity is really, really important to understand. And I want you, as I promised, we would go back to the brain and the spine and the vibrancy that happens when the brain and the spine are not being interfered with that dopamine hit. And we know dopamine comes in naturally to our bodies, like you described, as, you know, going for a walk and maybe taking some of the things that do depress us. Like, we never think of alcohol like a depressant. We think of alcohol as kind of like that escape, and you see all these fabulous, fun commercials about alcohol and partying and having fun. But the real truth of the matter is, when you're dealing with either a significant injury and you're an opiate, or B, you're trying to escape reality, so you drink, that's taking you farther to that dark side. And it's not about the amount of alcohol, because what's coming up through the World Health Organization is there's no safe amount of alcohol, even though your doctor will say, you know, how much are you drinking this in your week or your month? There it depends on who you are and what toxic soup are you in. So share more about the brain.
It depends where you are on that stress scale. It's where you are on that stress scale. If you're down the dark end, I don't think there's a safe amount of alcohol. And it's, but you hit on something really key there, Sherry, and that's that I think people self-medicate literally to numb their own pain. And that's usually why it happens. It's interesting because I've experienced all of this from a human level, not just as a neuroscientist, because I managed to burn out completely about 10 years ago. So I have been down that dark stage where I have the chronic back pain, neck pain, daily headaches, depression, severe anxiety. So I've experienced it, and I have experienced getting back out. And it is a journey, and it's a long journey. That's the sad thing. But what you do every day truly matters. And it's like making those choices, because the whole addictive pathway of going down there into addiction, addiction's also down that dark end, by the way. So, and it's like, as you go down into that addictive pathway, it gets harder and harder to stop yourself from continuing down that way, literally because our inhibitory part of our brain right behind our forehead, the prefrontal cortex, as we've talked about again in previous podcasts, and when you get stressed, it goes offline and you go into your limbic brain. And this is where we feel the pain, the hurt. This is where we now want to self-medicate. We just want to stop the pain. That's all we want to do. It's the prefrontal cortex, that's your rational thinking, logical brain, that inhibits thoughts and behaviors. So we know that when your prefrontal cortex isn't functioning, you know, it's harder for you to inhibit yourself from, you know, taking the opioid, having that glass, extra glass of wine or three, you know, whatever. But so, and we know that the further down the dark end of the scale you go, the more dysfunctional your prefrontal cortex is. So again, if we're going to bring it back to the spine, what's really fascinating then to me is that we've shown quite clearly, when we chiropractors check and adjust those dysfunctional segments of the spine, we know we impact that prefrontal cortex of your brain. So no wonder, you know, it's such a foundational thing that you can choose to have in your health regime to make sure that you're working towards that white side, the health, vitality, and function side, is that regular chiropractic care. It's become so important to me, especially from my own personal experience, that I go and pay a chiropractor every single week for a checkup. I send my husband goes, my kids both go. It is just the cornerstone. We also exercise. We're very careful with the food we eat. I try to do the mindfulness meditation. I'm not so good at that still. I'm a little bit too active in my brain, but I do gardening, Sherry, and that helps calm the brain down. We do yoga on a weekly basis because, again, with the yoga, it's those focused movements of the spine so that, you know, we're that conscious movement. But it's getting the movement in. It's getting that mindfulness, being present. It's the healthy food choices. It's the regular exercise. But the cornerstone of it is making sure that your spine knows accurately what's going on. Because, for example, like we know that if the spine's not working, then your brain's less aware of even where your arms and legs are. So if you, for example, are exercising, but you're subluxated, you've got these dysfunctions in your spine, it's just what chiropractors call that dysfunction. And then you're exercising, but this is where micro traumas can happen. So that every day when you're exercising, you're actually causing micro traumas to build up, which then eventually can probably lead to some of these musculoskeletal pain syndromes. And this is coming out in the research literature. There's even, you know, multiple authors, even non-chiropractic authors, that are writing about a lot of this musculoskeletal pain syndromes are probably starting and becoming chronic due to the brain not quite fully knowing what's going on. Specifically from the messaging from those little muscles around the spine, because everything you do is relating to the core. You cannot move your arm or a leg without it being moved in relation to your spine. That's just the nature of it. Even your eye muscles, Sherry, move in relation to what's going on in your neck and your spine, those little muscles, because your eyes should always be level so that you can detect threats. We're designed this way. So if your brain isn't fully aware of where your arms and legs are, and then it's, you know, you're trying to move and exercise and, you know, whatever, lift weights, well, you might start developing pain and tenderness unless you're getting checked and adjusted on a regular basis, because that's what's keeping that. It's like recalibrating so that your movements are done accurately compared to where they're connecting to the spine. And this is where, like, I like viewing the chiropractic care as exercising your spine back into proper function so that your brain is fully accurately aware of where your arms and legs are. It can interpret your sound and visual information. It can interpret other sensory information from your body and therefore control it better. It activates your prefrontal cortex. That's your inhibitory, rational, logical thinking part of your brain. And if we're going to bring it right back to the mental health thing too, Sherry, we know that prefrontal cortex is vitally important for depression, for anxiety, for pretty much every mental health condition known to man. And I think, again, that's why you'll find that the low back pain and the comorbid depression are interlinked, because the prefrontal cortex blowing is part of the reason that, you know, the spine's not working properly, the prefrontal cortex blows, you can't inhibit yourself properly, you can't control your spine properly, so you get that negative, and you get this rise in inflammation. That's another big key reason that you end up with both the pain and the depression. We know that is strongly linked with, because the prefrontal cortex actually activates the parasympathetic nervous system when it's working, and that's your anti-inflammatory system. But when the prefrontal cortex is not working, it normally inhibits the sympathetic fight and flight response, and it inhibits your endocrine stress response that releases cortisol in your body. And the cortisol and the fight and flight response increase inflammation. And again, you're designed that way to protect you. So small stresses is fine when you're at the healthy end. But if you're under chronic stress, you get more and more cortisol and fight and flight responses, and the inflammation starts to rise. And we know this is linked with the chronic musculoskeletal pain, like low back pain, neck pain, headaches. We know it's linked with the depression, anxiety, and a whole host of other mental health disorders. So it's And it's understanding this stress scale. And then I, you know, want to keep bringing it back to you're in control of what you do every day. And the smallest things, and I understand how hard it is when you're down that dark end to pretty much do anything, but you can still breathe, because I've been there. and it's about thinking smaller time frames at a time. If you write down that dark end, think small time frames, how to get through the next minute, the next hour. You know, don't think too far ahead into the future, and set yourself a little goal. Okay, I'm going to breathe for the next couple of minutes. And again, you know, even those breathing will actually release a bit of dopamine, and then you can feel good about yourself. And we know that that's that snowballing effect again, that if you keep setting yourself just a little goal, don't plan a marathon if you haven't started walking around your house yet. So start walking around your house, start breathing, but set little goals and achieve them, get the little dopamine fix, and your brain is helping you move back towards health, life, and vitality.
I love how you said that, because you know, when you're deep in the throes of the darkness, it really is the next minute that counts. And I remember specifically, I was with a driver in London, and he said, "Dr. Sherry, you seem to be in deep, deep thought." And I shared a little bit about what was going on, because I felt very stressed at the time, pertaining to a specific meeting. And he said, "You know what I've learned is people that think too far in the past get depressed, and people that think too far in the future get anxiety." And he said, "It's really just living in the present and being able to understand and have the ability to change what's happening right now." And I never forgot that, because it brings me back to those moments where we all get to is sometimes things do spiral out of control, and they're not part of, you can't control it. It's just life. And you mentioned at the very beginning, you know, we've been hit with a pandemic, and a lot of us have lost our loved ones. You can't control that. But what you can think of is, how do you work through those massive moments in our life? Maybe it is pain. Maybe it's chronic back pain, you slipped down the stairs or something that was significant. And you have to be able to have first things first, taking that breath. That next minute counts. What you're going to do in 5 minutes will make a difference to you and how you control it. And the interesting part, and I love the book, The Reality Check, because it brings people back to checking in. And they check in with the adjusted reality often. And we got lots of great questions when we had you on the last two episodes. And one was really about the actual adjustment. And many were confused about, you know, did the adjustment take place if there was a popping sound? And I do love that question. I'm sure as you have made yourself available globally, that you've had lots of people ask questions, but maybe you could tap into some of the top questions that you get when you talk about the neurophysiology, the brain, how it relates to the spine, and how important the spine is to how your brain thinks. I think it's so important, because we often think of the two entities as separate rather than combined. So could you share a little bit about what do you get when people start asking you about, well, you talk, Dr. Heidi, about, you know, the adjustment, but what is it? For those that are listening for the first time ever, and this is the first adjusted reality episode, you haven't heard Dr. Heidi talk before, don't worry, you got lots to catch up on, but bring it down to the basics for them.
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Sherry, because I know that even it's not an easy concept to understand if you haven't been involved in this area, or say you've never seen a chiropractor, or this is the first time you're listening to anyone even talk about an adjustment. What we're talking about is chiropractors who have 5 years of training minimum, often a lot longer than that, to check the spine for areas of dysfunction. And these areas of dysfunction, they're often, when the chiropractor will press on them, they'll feel tender to the touch. They may not have hurt before the chiropractor, "Oh, this is where it is, isn't it?" And you'll go, "Well, how did you know that?" You know, because we can actually, chiropractors can feel those tender spots in the spine because there are changes that happen around that area. We know, for example, that the small muscles that cross individual spinal bones, they're closest to the spine, they're little small muscles. We know they change quite dramatically over time after either an injury or stress or local inflammation. So they're the three big causes of this kind of local spinal dysfunction. What we know happened to the little muscles is they can shrink There's some fatty infiltration, so the muscles get full of little fatty infiltration bits. They change even their fiber type from being more sensory to sort of contracting a lot, and then they get too tired, and then they actually get neurologically switched off. So there's a whole host of changes that happen, and this is what chiropractors will feel for on the spine, and they often poke on it and go, it's a bit tender here, eh? And you go, oh, yeah, how did you know that? But that's what they're looking for. So the adjustment is when the chiropractor then very specifically will set you up. Say if it was in your neck, they very carefully position your neck, or in the middle of your back or in the lower back, they'll set you up very carefully to literally isolate the segments that are where this dysfunction around that segment has happened in those muscles. And then they'll provide what's called a high velocity, low amplitude thrust. It's a very short thrust, so it's not deep into the body, but it's very fast. And what we know happens when we do that really rapid but short little thrust is we stretch those little muscles that we've just isolated now when we're setting you up for the adjustment, and then you provide a little stretch of those little muscles. And that's why I keep talking about an adjustment. Some people might have heard the term manipulation. Some chiropractors use that, some don't, because in the scientific literature, in the research literature, it's best to use the manipulation term for if someone's just putting that kind of a thrust into a healthy joint, which is different. Like what chiropractors will usually put their little thrust into is that dysfunctional segment where it's not been working for a while and all these changes have happened to the tissues. Why they do this, like why they put that little thrust in, it's a bit like exercising those little muscles that have been turned off and haven't been working for a while. It's to activate them again. It's literally to exercise them back into proper function. And you might ask, well, why do that? Because that communication, the movement communication, every time you move, those little muscles will stretch. If you move that area of the spine, they'll stretch and they talk to the brain. And we know now from the last 10 years of research that communication from those little muscles to the brain is really important for then the brain to know what's going on, not just in that part of the spine, but it actually changes how accurately your brain can perceive what's going on in your arms, in your legs, and elsewhere in your body, as well as what's happening outside in the world around you. So the way your brain interprets what you see, what you hear, that's coming in from the outside. And then how it interprets all of this, it's a bit like everything is calibrated according to where you are. The way you can see is calibrated to where how your spine functions. So the adjustment is the chiropractor finding those little areas in the spine that aren't moving properly, where we know that there's these changes to the muscles around it, and providing that little thrust would actually just activate. It's like rebooting that little area. It's like exercising those little muscles, which is why it will take more than once or twice. You've probably noticed that if you've been to a chiropractor, is that it needs to be repeated a few times. You can't go to the gym once or twice and be fit for life. I'm very sad to say. I wish that was the case, but it's not. So that's why the repetition is important, because sadly we can't actually move those stuck bones ourselves. And what happens is you get several of these vertebrae that just get so non-moving, they almost become like they just move as a whole block, as opposed to nicely moving independently. And we know that this influences how your brain perceives what's going on inside your body and the world around you, which is why it's so important to activate it and bring it back to life. Because then your brain is more acutely aware, it can make better decisions. And it comes back to that big survey we talked about earlier on, Sherry, that 70% of people, Americans that go and see chiropractors, they feel better and they feel that they can cope better with their health concerns. You can drop down 40%, say they sleep better. You go right down to about 13% of people even feel like their relationships with others is better. And we can now explain all of that because of this link that we know when we're adjusting the spine, we change this part of your brain called the prefrontal cortex. Because that prefrontal cortex even has to do with our ability to relate to others and to care about other human beings and have empathy. And so it's so fascinating.
It is fascinating. You inspire me so much, because the more I think about it think of not knowing that you're out of what we'll classically say, you're not functioning at your optimum, or chiropractors like to use the term, you're out of alignment. And if you don't know, you don't know. Like it is that simple. So think of it as you're used to walking a tight wire in an 80-story building, blindfolded, but you don't know that it's hard because you've done it so often. So you're blindfolded, you're walking across this high wire, and you know, this is how you live life. And all of a sudden someone takes off the blindfold and you're like, whoa, I was doing that. And you recognize how much has been impacted because one of the segments is not moving as congruently as it should be moving. And so we're giving you back the perception of what really is happening in your life, only you don't recognize it. I remember one of our ultra athletes had said to me that I didn't recognize how hard it was to do what I was doing at that 70th mile until I had an adjustment. And then it was like back to mile one, where it was just easy and simple, because it is all sorts of stimulus that can throw our bodies really out of that balanced nature. And Heidi, you say it so well, and you brought up the adjustment.
A lot of people notice, Sherry, like once they start under care, you know, under chiropractic care, they do notice then things like, oh, you know, like I no longer knock my elbow in the door frames, and I'm not hitting my head as I get into the car, and I don't seem to stub my toe so often. And another common thing you hear is I don't tend to get sick anymore. You know, I used to always get the cold every year. And so there's all sorts of typical side effects. And I've got quotation marks here in the air because they're not side effects. They're like positive effects. But that, you know, you might have gone to see the chiropractor because you had neck pain. And, you know, they suddenly come and say, oh, look, my tinnitus seems to have cleared up. And I'm like, what tinnitus? You never told me you had tinnitus. So it's fascinating how it is so interrelated, because like I don't think we fully appreciated just how important your spine is for your brain to function at its best. And that's the key thing. But so you can notice it with clumsiness. And some people can't cope with lots of different stimulation. And then all of a sudden they get under chiropractic care and they start to have better coping ability with, you know, multimodal type of information. So it's fascinating.
It really is. And you've kind of taken it back to 10 years ago. We didn't know a lot about what was happening, you know, in the prefrontal cortex, just as an example. We're still learning more about that brain. And since you're heavily involved in research, you've been very international in your approach of being able to showcase the benefits of research and how it impacts the neuromusculoskeletal areas of our life, and how that the nerve, the muscle, the spine, the brain have impact into our daily lives. And that connection cannot be lost on anyone, because it is the reason why opioids exist. It is the reason why we tend to go towards alcohol or other more of that darker side when we don't understand the efficacious opportunities that are available to us today, not tomorrow, not yesterday, but can happen today. So over the course of the last 10 years specifically, and I know you've been bringing up more and more research, and we just gave research literally that was not less than in 2 weeks old as we bring it to you, and the Adjusted Reality crowd that listens wants them to be on the cutting edge. You've seen chiropractic evolve over the past decade, and you know, we get excited about learning more, but share with me how you have seen the evolvement of patients starting to understand chiropractic more, but researchers starting to understand they didn't even know how chiropractic in and of itself impacted the brain. Tell us a little bit about what you've seen over the past decade.
Oh, it's been an explosion, Sherry. But it's been a really interesting observation, because even just as a neuroscientist and as a brain scientist, I've seen these changes in our understanding of, for example, the effects of trauma, and especially childhood trauma, on our health and our well-being as adults. Things like the importance of our gut health and how important that gut health is for brain development and your health and your well-being. The understanding of pain, like we used to think of it as a danger warning, like we used to think it was a tissue pathology warning system, but it's not. We know it's a danger warning. So these dramatic changes in understanding, and hand in hand with this, we've started to understand these secrets of the spine, I like to call them. We didn't understand how important this spine was. Well, chiropractors knew, I suppose. Osteopaths probably knew, and physiotherapists knew, because otherwise they wouldn't have paid so much attention to it. But just how important that spinal function is for your brain health and your function. And that's been quite a shift in the last 10 years. A lot more chiropractors are learning about it. And so are, you know, you public members. And if you wanted to come and see, like, I've got a whole website actually at chiroshub.com, if that's okay to share.
Please.
I've got a lot of videos. So if you want to go and have a look at, because we translated this science, because it's so important for you to know why your spine is so important. So we've looked at all the research. Like, Sherry laughs at me because I'm always reading research articles. That's my bedtime activity, is I'm on Google Scholar looking things up. What's the latest science on this, that, and the other thing? I think it's fantastic. But I think it's so important that we translate that. And that's part of what we do. It's on chiroshub.com. There's over 60 different videos where you can have a look at, you know, they're each based on specific studies that have been done in the research literature. But again, it's translated into lay language, so it should be understandable by everybody. And if you want to go and check it out, please do. And let me know how you find it and if there's anything that we can improve.
Fantastic. Well, it is an absolute pleasure and having you, Heidi, and I think you nailed it. It's the secrets of the spine. And some of these mysteries are still unsolved, and we're learning more every single day. And artificial intelligence in the healthcare community is also being able to tap into things that we didn't even know was possible before. I think there's
we've done several studies using artificial intelligence. Maybe that should be a whole nother episode.
Oh, well, we bring her back for season 6, artificial intelligence and how it impacts the secrets of the spine. I love it. Dr. Heidi, it is such a pleasure, all the way from New Zealand today. We greatly appreciate you, and absolutely we will be having you back because our audience really does love you, and the input that we get from them and the questions that we get brings us back to come and learn more. So thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jerry. My absolute pleasure. I just love talking to you any day.
Thank you for tuning in to Adjusted Reality as we spoke to Dr. Heidi about the latest chiropractic research and how to maximize your quality of life. What are the secrets being unlocked by the spine? Well, this podcast was brought to you by the Foundation for Chiropractic Progress, and as a special gift for listening today, you can visit f4cp.org/health to get a copy of our Mind, Body, Spirit ebook, which focuses on many ways to optimize your health and the ones you love without the use of drugs or surgery. Don't forget to subscribe, share the podcast with family and friends, rate and review. If you're feeling so inspired to learn more about chiropractic or to find a doctor of chiropractic near you, visit f4cp.org/find a doctor. We appreciate your support. And as always, we look forward to checking in with you again soon.